tour destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and this is my rock star, Joe McCann. He's the CEO and co-founder of NodeSource. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. So let's dive right into it. What is NodeSource?
So NodeSource is the Node.js company. So the obvious next question is, well, what is Node.js? Node.js is an open source technology that powers software development, and it's kind of sweeping the nation. It's been adopted by about 100% of the Fortune 500 today. And we are the commercial vendor for Node.js.
Amazing. And you shared this awesome analogy to help me wrap my head around it. Share it with everyone watching and listening so they understand too.
Sure. So, you know, Node.js is a very technical project. It's an open source technology, like I said. But the easiest way to think about it is it's kind of like an engine for a car that powers software development, right? So if you think about sort of the past 20 years of software development, it's analogous to, say, the unleaded gasoline combustion engine in a car, right? So you've been driving a Ford F-150 for the past 20 years. It gets you from point A to point B, and it works just fine. There might be a couple of issues with it. And now there's this new car, the Tesla, which does the same thing, gets you from point A to point B, but it's a fundamentally different engine. That's kind of what we do with Node.js. Node.js is kind of the Tesla of software development. It's the new way that's more efficient, performant, and scalable for building software.
So cool. So how did you come up with this idea?
So I can't take all the credit because Node.js is actually an open source technology. And what that means is that there are multiple contributors and collaborators to the actual project itself. So in late 2009, a guy by the name of Ryan Dahl invented Node.js and kind of gave it away because that's what open source is about. It's about collaboration and contributing to the technology. I and my co-founder at the time were not, you know, doing anything commercially together, but we saw an opportunity that Node.js could be a radically transformational technology. So I kind of contributed to the open source project, started speaking at conferences and doing meetups and stuff to kind of garner some grassroots support for the project, and it's just taken off. By about 2013, we started to see a demand for professional services around Node.js. A lot of Fortune 500s were kind of dipping their toe in the water, but little uneasy to just be using something so new. So we helped them, you know, by some consulting work and doing some things to make sure that they were using Node the proper way. And then we kind of reached an inflection point in 2014 with the market for Node.js really started to explode. And we started to see companies like Walmart and PayPal, these massive organizations, starting to make huge bets on Node.js. And so we created NodeSource to be that Node.js company, to provide them with the tooling, the support, services, et cetera, to ensure that they were successful with Node.
Cool. And your background is fascinating. You were a DJ, then you worked on Wall Street, you were in the fashion industry, definitely a serial entrepreneur. Let's go back to the beginning when your entrepreneurial journey actually started as a child. Tell me about your first little endeavor.
Sure. I love telling this story. So back in fifth grade, I used to ride my bike to school, and every morning I would stop at the local Kmart and I would buy these 10 packs of gum. And each pack had 5 sticks of gum in each one. And the entire thing was just a dollar. So I might be dating myself a little bit here. But I would go to school. And of course, you weren't really supposed to have gum at school. But I found a market. And kids wanted to buy gum.
A rebellious market.
That is right.
You want to do what you can't do.
That's right. So I would have these 10 packs. And it would cost me a dollar. And I would go to school and sell each pack for a dollar a piece, netting $9
a day. There might still be a market for that.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I've always kind of had this, this fascination with markets and understanding how to fill certain market voids and whatnot. And obviously at 10 years old, I didn't realize that there was this market, but I was kind of exploiting something or leveraging something to my benefit. And it's just kind of been that way ever since fifth grade.
Do you think the entrepreneurial spirit is something that you're born with, or is it something that you can catch?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I can only speak from my own personal experience, other entrepreneurs that I have met, there is a consistency around grit and having determination, and just sort of being motivated to do things in a different way. I'm not sure if that is by environmental factors or if it's genetic. It could be a combination of both. you know, you meet people from all around the world that have very big ideas and are huge believers and dreamers and entrepreneurs. And then some folks at a more localized level that are just doing things in their local community as entrepreneurs. I'm not sure if it's something that can be taught or if it's something that is picked up.
But either way, they've got that grit.
They've got the grit. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then when you were in college, you started your first official entrepreneurial endeavor.
That's right.
And you funded it in a very unique way.
That's
so
right.
Tell us that story.
Yeah. So I was going to college in Portland, Oregon, and I actually qualified for Pell Grant money to use that to subsidize some of the costs of going to school. And I had a full-time job at the time as well. I was a chef at a restaurant. And I took that Pell Grant money and actually used that to not only also buy books, but also start an event production company. So myself and my younger brother, we started putting on electronic rave hip-hop events in Portland, Seattle, and actually in LA as well. And it was a ton of fun. It taught me a lot about the entertainment industry, but also just business in general, right? Thinking about things from insurance to, you know, meeting with the fire marshals to make sure we could do these types of events. At the age of 18, 19, that's a very unique thing to be able to do.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of our entrepreneurs watching and listening, they're at that place right now. So what did you learn in those first couple years of being an entrepreneur that you would really like to share with these entrepreneurs?
Yeah, great question. So for me, you know, my approach is really ready, fire, aim. Unfortunately, I move really, really fast. And I think if I could have taken a step back and kind of try to digest things a little bit slower, a little more comprehensively, some of the sort of the losses, whether it's financial or time or resource or opportunity cost, probably would have been minimized had you taken a little bit more time to focus on maybe the bigger picture as opposed to pure execution. Because as an entrepreneur, you're excited and you want to go out and change the world or just, you know, throw a music event. But doing it sort of the right way takes a lot of patience, which I'm still learning today.
I think patience is one of the hardest things as an entrepreneur, because as you said, you have so much passion and you know where you want to be.
Right.
And so you just want to be there now. But there are steps you have to take, especially to do it the right way and to create that foundation, right?
I completely agree. Yes.
So did you go to Wall Street next after DJing world?
Yeah, interestingly enough, and I'm sure my mother is laughing now. Well, the first book I ever checked out of a public library was actually on the stock market. I was about 8 years old and was just...
What?
Yeah, I know. Most people
really?
Are like fire trucks and, you know, sports athletes and stars and whatnot. I'm fascinated with math. I'm fascinated with numbers and pattern recognition. And back when I was doing the production company, I taught myself equities, options, and Forex trading. Now that back then, and I might be dating myself again, the only way to get a real-time data feed of a ton of data to be processing and doing informational analysis with was from the capital markets. And so I taught myself this trading mechanism to kind of scratch my own itch and eventually ended up moving to New York City and working on a trading desk on Wall Street.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So tell me a little bit about that time and how it's influenced you as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so... You know, I mentioned the pattern recognition piece. I think, you know, VCs do this. They see, you know, 1,000 deals a year and they start to recognize certain patterns. Traders actually, if they're not algorithmic, meaning all computer-based, human beings will start to see patterns in the markets, for example, and benefit from those. I think that's the thing that I learned the most about from the trading aspect was with NodeSource, for example. This technology, right? I mentioned it had a shot at the very early stages of being radically transformational because I saw the pattern. I saw the opportunity for something to really kind of blow up. Now you have to hedge against that as well. And I think that's the other thing that you start to learn as a trader is being a trader is extremely competitive. It requires strong intestinal fortitude as well. But it is something that teaches you how to manage risk as well. And you know, one of my tattoos is actually risk on my wrist. It's something that it constantly reminds me of. It's how can you actually sort of exploit a market or benefit from something that's growing or that you see this potential pattern, but you hedge against your risk from that as well. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I learned on the trading desk.
Ooh, so much I want to ask you about risk. When we come back with my guest, Joe McCann, CEO and co-founder of NodeSource, the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
I don't care if you work hard, and neither does the market. Everybody works hard. The successful people are the people who sacrifice more. If your habits are just like your friends, where they're going to Coachella and the music festivals and all those other things, or watching Netflix on binging, and you're doing all the same things as them, get out of here. You're not an entrepreneur. So if you're willing to, like, have an honest conversation with yourself. Are you really willing to not go to those birthday parties, stay up till 3 a.m, and those stupid things like eat Top Ramen forever? That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. And if you're not willing to do those things, get out of here, because you're going to lose. That's the only thing I can promise you.
Business Rockstars.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day. Watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Underage smoking and vaping is a serious problem. One way to combat it, raise the legal age to purchase from 18 to 21. About 80% of high school students turn 18 before graduating. If they can legally buy tobacco, they can share with underage classmates. Raising the purchase age to 21 reduces underage access. That's why Juul Labs supports making 21 plus the law nationwide. Learn more at juul.com/T21. Juul Labs, for adult smokers only. Paid for by Juul Labs.
This is your check.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and this is Joe McCann. He's the CEO and co-founder of NodeSource, and we were talking about risk and how to really take calculated risks. Yeah. So what's your advice on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is no sort of magic formula here. I think everyone has to kind of evaluate their own risk parameters. But, you know, for me, having been an entrepreneur from a very early age, one of the things that I've done, particularly when starting NodeSource, was, you know, I didn't dive right into it, right? You know, if somebody says quit your job and follow your dreams, it's probably because they're already wealthy enough to be able to do something like that. And I don't think the majority of folks are in such a privileged position.
No.
So one of the things that I did was, and I recommend this to some folks, is, you know, have a full-time job and kind of have something on the side, because in essence, you can start to evaluate, okay, I've got kids, or I've got, you know, mortgage payment or bills or whatever it might be. And if I just leave all that to go focus on this thing and this doesn't work out, then you're kind of in a bad situation.
Right.
Right.
And that's what you did, right? For a while, you
that's
had
correct.
Another job?
That's correct. Yeah. So I was actually the CTO at an ad agency in New York while I was kind of cultivating NodeSource. Mm-hmm. And what that enabled me to do was to say, okay, I have a full-time job. I know that I'm able to kind of keep this going. And yes, I'm going to work a lot of extra hours on my passion project, which is the company that I want to start. But that way I can go into it kind of knowing, all right, do I have customers, or is there a market to sell into? What does that market look like? And who are the people that I need to potentially hire to help me build that business while not being radically distracted with your personal finances? And I think that's one of the biggest things about calculating that risk is if you are constantly distracted with your personal financial obligations, you can't focus on the business.
Oh, good right? point. So it's really doing that research and understanding your market and if there is a market.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, looking into, you know, whether it's you want to, you know, start a new fast food company or you're doing something like a tech company, to figure out if there is actually a market there is challenging. But doing that work up front, I think, is extremely valuable, because you may have this very siloed sort of in your own bubble belief that you have the next great, you know, photo sharing app. But if there's not really a market for that anymore, no one's going to care. And then you've poured a lot of not only your potential money into something like that, but your time. And that's the most valuable piece for an entrepreneur, is that if you're spending too much time on something that really doesn't have a big opportunity to sell into, then you're probably wasting your time.
So let's take it a step further. How do you know if there's a market? Where do you go about starting that research?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, from my personal experience, I think it goes back again to pattern recognition, right? So I have an enterprise software company. We sell to other businesses. So consumer startups very, very different, yeah. right? You may come out with the next, you know, hoverboard, right? That thing didn't really exist before it actually was put out into the market. But when it comes to things like more B2B or enterprise related companies, look at what, you know, companies in Fortune 500s have been doing for a long time, right? You could look at the HR industry or accounting or finance, the parts that run the operations of a business. And if you see opportunities to sort of improve that aspect of the business, well, then go size that market, right? So for example, let's take HR. How big is the HR market? Well, let's say we just wanted to focus on benefits. Well, how big is that benefits market? And how many companies use HR companies that provide their benefits? Now you've got a market that you can actually look into. Because more importantly, if you bootstrap the business, you want to get those first couple of customers to show that you can actually sell into them. But then secondarily, if you go to fundraise, one of the things that investors look for is how big is that market and, right. and tell me how big it actually is. And having that research, having that answer is a massive differentiator for folks that are going to be able to raise money and those whom are not.
So for entrepreneurs that have a great idea, they now know that there's a market for it, then a big question becomes, how am I going to fund this project? I love that you're an example of having humble beginnings, but finding a way to get it done. And the majority of your businesses, or all of them, I think you said, you started with bootstrapping. So tell me about this bootstrapping process.
Yeah. So in my opinion, bootstrapping a business can really test the metal of you as an entrepreneur. It's that grit that we talked about earlier, right? And I think one of the benefits of doing that is, number one, you are really in control of your own destiny at that point. Now, granted, you know, you may have to work a couple of jobs. Like I mentioned, you kind of have this thing brewing on the side, so it can eat up a lot of your time and resources. But in doing the bootstrap, and through the bootstrapping process, you can, number one, start to determine, is there something really here? We talked about the market, but we also talked about, are there people I can hire? Are there customers available to this sort of thing? And if you bootstrap that, you kind of have a proof point there that is extremely valuable in the case that you want to potentially go to raise money. So in the process of bootstrapping, I believe that what you'll learn about how you can actually position the value of your company to prospective investors is orders of magnitude higher than if you just walked into, you know, Silicon Valley and asked a bunch of VCs, hey, look at my pitch deck and tell me what you think.
I think it forces you to make more strategic, wiser decisions too.
Absolutely.
Because that's your money you're spending. When it's your own money, it's a little harder to spend. So you want to make sure you really, really are making good decisions.
Yeah, you basically have skin in the game, right? I mean, I think this is one of the challenges with a lot of folks that just raise money initially is that if you don't have skin in the game, meaning, you know, sweat equity, of course, you're going to work a ton of hours and work really hard. But if you've got your own money that you've worked hard for into that business, you're going to think a little bit harder about a lot of those decisions that you're going to make.
Right. And you did eventually end up raising money. So tell me a little bit about that pitch process.
Yes. So first and foremost, I had no experience pitching to VCs. It is a rather daunting experience if you don't have any experience doing it. But fortunately, you know, I was raised doing a lot of theater arts and music as a child. My mother taught children's theater. So being in front of people or sort of presenting, if you will, kind of came as second nature. So I had an edge there. However, there are some things that I think entrepreneurs should think about before they go into that initial pitch. One is, know that venture capitalists are professional deal makers. This is all they do, right? They'll see 1,000 pitches in a year. So what are you going to do to be able to differentiate? And more importantly, expect them to ask questions and interrupt your process and flow so that they want to see how you can react to that sort of stuff, right? I think the other thing with pitching is, if you can find anyone, an advisor, a mentor, another entrepreneur that's done it before, and just find 15 minutes and have coffee with them. Tell me, what was your first pitch like? What do I need to be prepared for? What do I wear? What do I do? Who do I talk to? Who do I look at? These little things that can actually make a bigger impact, because it's repetition over and over and over again that will actually make you successful in the fundraising process.
And so tell me a little bit about your co-founder.
Yeah.
How do you guys work together?
Yeah, great. So my co-founder, Dan Shaw, and I have known each other in the Node.js community for years. And he is a sort of an iconic figure in the Node.js community, right? So he's extremely focused on evangelizing and supporting the open source side of Node.js and making sure that it continues to grow. Today, Node.js is the fastest growing open source project on Earth, ahead of any other technology. We've actually got more than a third of software developers on the entire planet are self-identified as Node.js developers. So the work that he does there is extremely critical to the success of Node.js just as a technology. I'm kind of more like the business guy, right? I focus heavily on, you know, what are the strategic initiatives that we need to accomplish in, say, 2017? Or how are we thinking about the commercial aspect of open source? What are the macro trends that are happening at sort of the C-suite when there's big concerns around cybersecurity, for example? And that gives us a really good balance because he has the pulse, really, on the open source community with Node.js, and I have the pulse more or less on the commercial aspect of it.
Joe McCann, he's the CEO and co-founder of NodeSource. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Allison Maslin's joining us. She's the CEO of AMI. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
AMI. Yes. I know it's your first and your last name in international.
Yes.
What do you do?
We run a business coaching agency, and we mentor business owners all over the world to help them take their business to the next level and beyond.
So how did you get in that space? Because we're in similar spaces. We actually shared the stage together.
Yes.
And ironically, now you're here.
I know. I love it. 6 degrees of separation.
That's right. Always. So how did you get into this space? I know everyone kind of gets in their own different ways. I'm curious how you got into it.
I never set out to be in the business coaching world. I am an entrepreneur first. I've built 10 companies of my own from the ground up since I was 19 years old.
Started young.
And I couldn't hold a job for more than 2 weeks. So I figured I have to figure out this entrepreneurial thing or forget it. And I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. My father built the largest chain of women's clothing stores in the United States that were privately owned. And he had such a passion for his work. So I said, you know, I want to do that. And so I've just been building companies for over 30 years. And people started asking me, how do you do this? Can you teach me? And so one thing led to another. And now I have a whole team of coaches. And I love it. Yeah.
It's actually crazy how many people in this space just built successful companies and then inevitably start being interviewed about that and then start being speaking about that. And then maybe, why don't you have a book? And then, and then you find yourself being a business coach, consultant, author, speaker, and essentially sometimes info marketer selling education products online.
Yeah.
What did you do before though? I know you said you couldn't keep a job. You started businesses. I want to hear about what some of those businesses were.
Definitely.
Tell us. What were the ones that didn't work? What were the ones that did work?
Well, so I started out in college writing personalized poems for people for birthdays and anniversaries. Wow. And that was Expressions by Allie. I don't even count that as one of the 10 companies, but that's how I started. And then people would say, you know, Allison, I don't need a poem. I don't need a greeting card, but do you do brochures? Do you do radio? Do you do television? And one thing that I learned from my dad is if someone asks you to do something, even if you don't know how to do it, just say yes. And so I just kept saying yes. And I would walk out of their office going, oh my God, I have no idea how to do this.
Yeah, a true entrepreneur.
Exactly. But it's amazing what you can do when your back's against the wall. Yeah. And I had great mentors from early on. So I really believe in that. And then by the time I was 25, I had a full service advertising and PR firm. And we had clients like Ben & Jerry's and Supercuts and Charlotte Russe. And that built up very fast. I was making a lot of money flying all over the country, building these brands. Yeah. So you would have looked at me and thought, wow, this woman is so successful. And I was financially, but internally I was falling apart. Mm. And I didn't understand back then how to build the foundation, how to have a strong logistics to support all of this growth. And it really grew so fast that I fell apart physically, emotionally, spiritually. Yeah. And I ended up walking away from that business with nothing and made a decision from that point on that I was going to do only things that I was passionate about and excited about. So then I went on to build 9 more companies that I've loved, but with the understanding of how to build a strong foundation, how to build a team to support you and delegate and all those crucial things when you scale.
It's awesome that you brought that up because I feel like some people, when they have adversity, when they have pain, when they fail, sometimes it cripples them and sometimes they never bounce back from it. You use that as a learning tool and it helped you build another 9 successful companies. CEO of AMI, Allison Mousen, is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Fly through out of the 9 that you built. Which one was one of your favorites?
Probably the homeopathic practice. I've been a homeopathic physician for 20 years. Huh. So when I fell apart back then, I wanted to find a way to heal myself as well. And I discovered homeopathic medicine. It changed my life. I decided, okay, I want to do this work. It's amazing. Yeah. And then I built the largest homeopathic college in the country as well. The
college?
The Homeopathic Academy of Southern California.
Very cool.
And then that was back in 99, and then I sold that in 2005. So, yeah, I mean, I've loved them all. You know, I've had a scuba dive certification company. I've had a chain of beauty salons.
You just do anything you like. You're like, I went scuba diving one time. Yeah, and let's build a scuba diving company.
That was pretty much it, you know. But your business has to have a deeper meaning to you. Hmm. If you're only going after it because of money, you're not going to stick with it when you get rejected or times get tough. And so for me, I learned from that early on business experience, even though I was successful at, it didn't fill me up. And when you can merge the two, you have something that you can really monetize and make very profitable and you love and that there's a need for it in the marketplace, you have a winner.
Don't just make a dollar, make a difference. And that's something that I try to not only live by for my businesses, but help others do as well. As a business coach, right? You've been doing this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. You've obviously experienced a lot of people out there.
Yes.
I think that one of the most deadly things in business is the 6 words, we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing consulting, when you're working with all these different businesses around the world of all shapes and sizes and profitability, what do you see as like the common reasons why they're not as successful as they could be?
There's a couple reasons. Yeah. And I love exactly what you said. I find number one, they're not revenue focused. They get very caught up in the passion and the product, which is very important. But how are we going to monetize this? And are we focused on sales every single day?
Yeah. I'm not good at sales, though. I'm not good at marketing is what I hear all the time.
Well, then you need to work with a mentor, right? Yes.
That's how we get clients, though.
Yes, the yes but, right? Yeah. And that doesn't work in business. So you've got to always be open to learn. Yeah. I mean, you may be a great shoemaker and have the best shoe invention in the world, but if people don't know about it and your shoes aren't out there, you know, taking care of people's feet, then you're not going to be long for
this
world.
That's why they say that the cobbler's son never has shoes.
This is true. I know.
The shoemaker.
They're so busy making all those shoes. But you really have to be focused on revenue. I always tell our clients from 8:30 to 11:30, all you're doing is sales. Mm. That's it. Nothing else. Yeah. And if you can get your mind to focus that way, even as the CEO of the company, let's say you have hundreds of employees, the most successful companies are where the CEO, the founders are focused on revenue and involved, you know, with the sales team.
A mutual friend of ours, John Asaroff,
yes,
taught me, and he calls it, focus the first like 4 hours of your day on the highest income and impact generating activities. Yeah. Same thing, saying it a different way. That's changed my business for me. And what's crazy is like, kind of like Tim Ferriss's 4 hour work week. Mm-hmm. It's more like the 4 hour day.
Yes.
You spend those 4 hours just on the highest income and impact activities. And usually you're done. If you did that from 8 to 12, you're done.
Yes.
And I've tested it. And I would just work from like 8 to 12 or 9 to 1, whatever I wanted. And I would stop working the rest of the day and just read. Like stop working on making money. And people like pretend that they're working. They're doing low income, low impact, trivial activities. I tested it and I was like, let's just see if I work less, but only focus my activities on the income generating stuff. And I double, triple, you know, quadruple my income in that period of time that I did that. And I was like, this is insane.
Yeah. No, one of our clients, this is just an example, Liz Papagni, who runs a marketing agency, and she hated sales.
Yeah.
And she was nervous to pick up the phone. She had a great product and service offerings.
Yeah.
So by teaching her to be revenue focused, she just let me know recently that she closed a $250,000 contract.
It's a good client.
Right. So, you know, there's people out there that need you. They're waiting for you. Mm. So, you know, you got to show up. You
got
to ask for the sale. And
then
the second thing you said, what are two things? The second thing is that I find the difference between successful people and those that struggle, the ones that are successful, when you get knocked down, you're much faster at getting back up from any disappointment. So if you count, if you measure the time, the person that struggles wallows in that disappointment, stays paralyzed from the fear, takes it personally. The successful person says, you know what? I'm going to learn from this and I'm just going to move on and do it better the next time.
I love that you brought that up because I feel like that is one of the biggest reasons why most people don't achieve not only the financial abundance they're capable of, but the quality of life, is that they take rejection and failure personally. When in reality, rejection is feedback and there's no such thing as failure, there's only results. So I love that you brought that up. I'm curious, what's next for you? Is it another book? Is it a new company? What's next?
I promised my husband that there's no more companies right now. Now I just get to pay it forward and help other business owners grow their business. And we have a mastermind called the Pinnacle Global Network, and we've been running it for 7 years. We have business owners all over the world, and it's an amazing opportunity to work side by side with a coach to hold your hand and guide you to success.
So besides me, other people out there say, that sounds awesome. I want to be a part of that. How can they get in touch with you or learn more?
Definitely. Just go to my website, which is allisonmaslin.com. And then I also have a gift to give away.
Gift.
Yeah, this is brand new. I'm actually pretty excited about it. And it's our Millionaire CEO Blueprint. And it's a series of 5 videos where I do some very in-depth teaching, some of the things we talked about, but more in-depth, and handouts and all of that. And you just go to allisonmaslin.com/CEO.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure our audience is going to appreciate that. They'll plug that in here somewhere, but I appreciate you for coming on the show.
So great, Mark.
Thanks,
thank
awesome.
You for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now a Business Rockstars Minute. How do you avoid the entrepreneur failure trap? I'm Pat O'Brien with a Business Rockstars Minute. Let's face it, it can be stressful owning your own business. You have 2 choices, let it stress you out, or you can remain strong and help your business succeed. Here are some powerful tips that will assist you in being a success without learning the hard way. 1, shortcuts. They may seem like a good idea, but rarely are shortcuts helpful. You should always poise yourself to do things right the first time. 2, overcome your fear. Don't allow something that hasn't happened yet be the reason your idea never takes off. And finally, never give up. It won't always be easy, but even through the ups and downs, you'll taste sweet success and you'll only want more out of that success. So keep going. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. That can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-993-8236. That's 800-993-8236.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
That's 800.
'Do's and don'ts of getting an investor. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley. This is Business Rockstars. And joining us to answer that question, John Sebastiani. He's the CEO of Sonoma Brands. And you invest in a lot of brands. So what is the number one thing that you are looking for in a brand?
Number one, we're going to look for the size of the optimized idea. So we're going to reverse engineer what an exit looks like. We need to understand that if everything goes perfectly, what's going to be the value of this asset that we're looking at? And so it's important for an entrepreneur to understand that as they're going in.
When they give you your pitch, what does that pitch need to include?
Well, it needs to include a very clear set of data to demonstrate a fact-based selling story that they're heading towards a very clear value-based assumption. So if we're approaching through the Crave lens, a $4.5 billion category, and I'm demonstrating specific velocities in a statistically significant amount of stores, I can prove what they call sales per point, sales per door. It's a very metric-oriented number that I can then apply and model out exactly what the size of this opportunity means. In food and beverage, we live in a retail world where things are changing. Amazon and directed to home delivery is changing. But by and large, the Walmarts and Costcos and Krogers of the world provide us a blueprint of understanding exactly, if a business is modeled correctly, what it means and what it's worth.
What else needs to be in that pitch? Probably a few other things, right?
I think so. I think there needs to be a clearly laid out plan in terms of where they're going to spend the money. Now, I mean, we're in a very frothy economy right now where it's a great time to be a seller of a business or a seller of part of a business. Mm-hmm. But I think obviously the entrepreneur has to be extremely talented because you're going to give them the capital to build their business. You're betting on that horse. Mm-hmm. So not only do they have to have the charisma and the ability to tell and their compelling story, but they have to have the discipline or the team to provide where they're going to spend it. It's a complicated ecosystem out there of how to build a brand at retail.
So those intangible things like charisma, wow factor, do you think that that can be taught, or is it like you either have it or you don't?
I think you either have it or you don't. I think people can perfect skills. I think they can improve them, but I think they're, you know, it's, you know, it's hard to teach an elephant how to race a horse race. And I think that not all entrepreneurs that don't have it can't run a wildly successful business. They'll have to find somebody that does have it.
Okay, so maybe get a co-founder if you're a little awkward, but you've got the knowledge to back up your business.
We've met incredibly authentic and talented experts in their products domain. It could be any given category where there's lots of innovation happening in meatless burgers and non-dairy cheeses, and there's chemistry involved. So there can be great entrepreneurs that are more in the lab, they're more in the design of the recipe, but they're not the face of the brand. So we would look to a co-founder or a highly incentivized participant that is that person.
So then find that person that is charismatic, and then you have to tell the story. What do you think is the key to telling your brand story in a persuasive way?
In food and beverage, at the end of the day, we have so many options in front of us. And so the story, of course, is going to blend in the health and wellness elements of what you're eating. But at the same time, we want it, eating is entertaining, and we want to be satisfied with what we eat. And part of that is taking the consumer out of the ordinary and giving them something extraordinary. And so the ability to weave in storytelling, the ability to take them to a spot of I'm more athletic or I'm going to lose weight, all of the usage occasions of why people do certain things, you have to have that story. It has to be a part of what you are. It
Very
can't
crucial.
Just be enough to mm-hmm. have good packaging. It's no longer enough just to taste good. Those things are expectations. There's got to be more.
Absolutely. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by John Sebastiani, CEO of Sonoma Brands. We're talking do's and don'ts of getting an investor. So we've talked about a lot of do's. What are some of the don'ts?
One of the most common things that I see are entrepreneurs that are hesitant to raise the capital when they can, because there's this reasoning that I don't want to sell part of my company yet. I have a successful idea. It's working. I'm going to get there. I'm not ready to sell equity in my company to you. And it's the most basic analogy of, do you want to have, you know, a slice of a watermelon, or do you want to have 100% of a grape? And entrepreneurs need the capital. To manage growth, you need the right partner who's going to bring in strategic and operational assistance and expertise, but you also need the capital. If you're a founder that's managing your checking account balance to make sure you have enough cash to put in the next order for your inventory, that's not a good use of your time. So that's probably one of the things that I'm constantly encouraging founders to, when you can, and there is a right time, but embrace raising capital, raise the money so you can run your business.
So how do you know it's the right time and the right investor?
Chemistry in terms of the right investor. There has to be a loyalty. There has to be a trust factor. You have to share a vision of what you're trying to accomplish. There needs to be a sense of 1 + 1 = 3, that the collaboration creates a greater unity than you have individually. They become a part of your business. They're in the boardroom with you. You can't have a fear factor where they have ulterior motives with your company. So that is always joined by the offer. And so if investor A is willing to give you the capital at a higher valuation for your business, but that investor has a questionable history or is more of an antagonist type investor, more of a P&L type investor versus somebody that understands your mission, understands where you want to take the brand, you always want to look at that relationship first.
All right. Thank you so
much
to my guest, John Sebastiani. He's the CEO of Sonoma Brands, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.